avoid being trampled. The redhead shrieked, "See you in fairy!" Then she was on her hands and knees, licking the floor and fighting for pieces of Unseelie. I looked around for Barons again. At least I didn't smell like fear. I was too disgusted and angry. I pushed through the press of sweaty, jostling bodies. This was my world? This was what we'd come to? What if we never got the walls back up? Was this what I was going to have to live with? I began to shove people out of the way. "Watch where you're going!" a woman snapped.
"Chill, bitch!"
some guy snarled.
"Are you asking for an ass-kicking?"
a man threatened.
"Hey, beautiful girl."
My head whipped around. It was the dreamy-eyed guy that had worked with Christian at the Ancient Languages Department at Trinity College, then had taken a bartending job at Chester's when the walls fell. The last time I'd seen him, I had a creepy experience, looking at his reflection in a mirror. But here he stood, behind a black-and-white bar walled with mirrors, tossing glasses and pouring shots with smooth, showy flair, and both he and his reflection looked every inch the perfectly normal, young, gorgeous guy with dreamy eyes that melted me. Though I was eager to see my parents, this guy kept showing up, and I no longer believed in coincidences. My parents were going to have to wait. I pulled up a stool next to a tall, gaunt man in a pinstriped suit and top hat, who was shuffling a deck of cards with skeletal hands. When he turned to look at me, I jerked and looked away. I did not look back again. Beneath the brim of his hat, there was no face. Shadows swirled like a dark tornado.
"Divine your future,"
it said. I shook my head, wondering how it spoke without a mouth.
"Ignore him, beautiful girl.
Show you who you are."
I shook my head again, silently willing it to go away.
"Dream me a song."
I rolled my eyes.
"Sing me a line."
I angled my body away from it.
"You show me your face, I'll show you mine."
Cards snapped together as it shuffled. "Look, buddy, I have no desire to see..." I broke off, physically unable to say another word. I opened my mouth and closed it, like a fish gasping for water, but I was gasping for words. It was as if all the sentences that I had been born with, enough to last a lifetime, had been sucked from me, leaving me utterly blank, silenced. The shape of my thoughts, the way I would phrase them, had been taken. Everything I'd ever said, everything I ever would say, it held now. I felt a terrible pressure inside my head, as if my brain was being vacuumed clean of who I was. I had the crazy thought that, in moments, I would be as blank behind my face as it was beneath its hat, leaving only a dark tornado ceaselessly whirling inside my skull. And maybe, just maybe, once it had everything it wanted from me, a fragment of a face would appear beneath its brim. Terror gripped me. I shot a frantic look at the dreamy-eyed guy. He turned away and poured a shot. I mouthed a silent plea at his reflection in the mirror behind the bar.
"I keep telling you not to talk to things,"
the reflection of the dreamy-eyed guy said. He poured and served, moving from one customer to the next while my identity was erased. "Help me!" my eyes screamed in the mirror. The dreamy-eyed guy finally turned back to me.
"She is not yours,"
he told the tall, gaunt man.
"She spoke to me!"
"Look deeper."
After a moment.
"My mistake,"
the card-shuffling thing said.
"Don't repeat it."
As abruptly as they'd vanished, I had words again. My brain was full of thoughts and sentences. I was a person, complete with ideas and dreams. The vacuum was gone. I fell off my stool and stumbled away from the faceless man. On shaky legs, I tottered three stools down, hoisted myself back up, and clutched the counter.
"He will not bother you again,"
the dreamy-eyed guy said. "Whiskey," I croaked. He slid a shot of top-shelf whiskey down the counter. I slammed it back and demanded another. I gasped as fire exploded inside me. Though I wanted nothing more than to put a mile between myself and the card-shuffling monster, I had questions. I wanted to know how the dreamy-eyed guy could command something like that. For that matter, what was the faceless thing?
The fear dorcha, beautiful girl.
Reading my mind?
Don't have to. Questions all over your face.
How does it kill? I'm obsessed with the many ways the Fae dole out death. I make meticulous notes in my journal on the various castes and their methods of execution.
Death is not its goal.
What is?
It seeks the faces of humanity, beautiful girl. Got one to spare?
I said nothing. I had no desire to know more. Chester's was a Fae safety zone. On my last visit to the club, it was made abundantly clear to me that if I killed anything on the premises, I would be killed. Since Riordan and his men already wanted me dead, tonight probably wasn't the best night to test my luck. If I learned more about it, or the killing weight of my spear in my shoulder holster grew any heavier, I might do something rash.
Some things can't be killed that easy.
I glanced, startled, at the dreamy-eyed guy. He was looking at my hand inside my coat. I hadn't even realized I'd reached for it. It's Fae, right? I said.
Mostly.
So how can it be killed?
Does it need to be killed?
You'd stick up for it.
You'd stick a spear in it.
I raised a brow. Apparently a prerequisite for working at Chester's was that you had to like the Fae and be willing to put up with their unique appetites.
Haven't seen you in a while.
He changed the subject smoothly. Haven't been around to be seen, I said coolly.
Almost weren't just now.
Funny guy, aren't you?
Some think so. How you been?
Good. You?
All in a day's work.
I smiled faintly. Barons had nothing on the dreamy-eyed guy's evasive answers.
Gone light again, beautiful girl?
In the mood for a change.
More than the hair?
Suppose.
Looks good on you.
Feels good?
May not be useful. Times like these. Where have you been?
He tossed a glass into the air and I watched it tumble lazily, end over end. In the Silvers, walking around the White Mansion, watching the concubine and the unseelie king have sex. But I spend most of my days trying to figure out how to corner and control the Shisadu. The name of the unseelie king's book seemed to hiss sibilantly through the air, and I felt a breeze as every unseelie head in the club turned toward me in unison. For a split second, the entire club was silent, frozen. Then sound and motion resumed with the tinkle of crystal as the wine glass the dreamy-eyed guy had been tossing hit the floor and shattered. Three stools down, the tall, gaunt thing made a choking sound, and his deck of cards sprayed the air, raining down on the counter, my lap, the floor. Ha! I thought. Got you, dreamy eyes. He was a player in all this. But who was he, and which team was he playing for? So who are you really, dreamy-eyed guy, and why do you keep popping up?
Is that how you see me? In another life, would you take me to the prom? Home to meet the parents? Kiss me good night on the stoop?
I said stay close.
Barons growled behind me.
And don't talk about the bloody book in this bloody place. Move your ass, Miss Lane, now!
He took my arm and pulled me from the stool. Cards spilled from my lap as I stood up. One had slipped inside the fur collar of my coat. I removed it and began to toss it away, but at the last moment stopped and looked at it. The Fear Dorcha had been shuffling a tarot deck. The card I held was framed in crimson and black. In the center, a hunter flew over a city at night. The coast was a dark border for the silver sheen of the ocean in the distance. On the hunter's back, between great, dark, flapping wings, was a woman with a soft tassel of curls blowing around her face. Between strands of hair, I could see her mouth. She was laughing. It was the scene from my dream the other night. How could I be holding a tarot card with one of my dreams on it? What was on the rest of the cards? I glanced down at the floor. Near my feet was the Five of Pentacles. A shadowy woman stood on a sidewalk, peering through the window of a pub, watching a blonde woman inside who was sitting at a booth, laughing with her friends. Me watching Alina. On strength, a woman sat cross-legged in a church, naked, staring at the altar as if praying for absolution. Me after the rape. The Five of Cups showed a woman who looked startlingly like Fiona, standing in BB&B, crying. In the background, I could see... I bent and peered closer. A pair of my high heels? And my iPod! On the sun were two young women sprawled in bikinis, one lime green, the other hot pink, soaking up the rays. There was the death card, a hooded grim reaper, scythe in hand, standing over a bloody body, female again, me and Malooch. There was one with an empty baby carriage, abandoned near a pile of clothing and jewelry. One of those parchment-like husks the shades left behind protruded from the carriage. I ran my hands through my hair, pushing it back as I stared down.
Prophecies, beautiful girl. Come in all shapes and sizes.
I glanced up at the dreamy-eyed guy, but he was no longer there. I looked to my right. Mr. Tall, pinstriped and gaunt, was also gone. On the bar, beside a freshly filled shot and a Guinness, another tarot card had been placed with care, face down, black and silver side up.
Now or never, Miss Lane, I don't have all night.
I tossed back the shot and chased it, then picked up the card and slipped it into my pocket for later. Baron steered me to a chrome staircase that was guarded at the bottom by the same two men that had escorted me to the top floor to see Riordan the last time I was here. They were enormous, dressed in black pants and T-shirts, with heavily muscled bodies and dozens of scars on their hands and arms. Both carried snub-nosed automatics. Both had faces that drew the eye, but the moment you saw them made you want to look away. As we approached, they swung their weapons toward me.
What the fuck is she doing here? Get over it, Lore,
Baron said.
When I say jump, you say how high.
The one that wasn't Lore laughed, and Lore slammed him in the gut with the butt of his gun. It was like hitting steel. The guy didn't even flinch.
The fuck I jump? In your dreams. Laugh again, Fade, and you'll be eating your balls for breakfast, bitch.
Lore spat in my general direction, but he didn't look at me. He looked at Baron's, and I think that's what pushed me over the edge. I glanced between the two guards. Fade stared straight ahead. Lore glared at Baron's. I stepped away from Baron's and walked directly in front of them. Their gazes never wavered. It was as if I didn't exist. I had no doubt I could stand there and do a dance naked and they'd still stare at anything but me. I grew up in the Deep South, in the heart of the Bible Belt, where there are still a few men who refuse to look at a woman that isn't a relative. If a woman is with a man they need to speak with, whether it's her daddy, boyfriend or husband, they'll look at the man the entire time. If the woman asks a question and they bother answering at all, they direct their reply to the man. They even turn to the side a little, as if catching a glimpse of her in their periphery might condemn them to eternal damnation. The first time it happened to me, I was 15 and dumbfounded. I kept asking question after question, trying to get Old Man Hatfield to look my way. I'd begun to feel invisible. Finally, I'd moved to stand right in front of him. He'd stomped off in the middle of a sentence. Daddy had tried to explain to me that the old man considered it a kind of respect he was paying, that it was a courtesy given to the man the woman belonged to. I hadn't been able to get past the words, the man the woman belonged to. It was a property thing, pure and simple, and apparently Lore, who according to Barons didn't even know what century it was still living in a time when women had been owned. I hadn't forgotten his comment about Castello, who hadn't spoken in more than 1,000 years. How old were these men? When? How? Where had they lived? Barons took my arm and turned me toward the staircase, but I shook him off and turned back to Lore. I was getting way too much bad press. I wasn't a stone. I hadn't been created by the Unseelie King, and I wasn't a traitor. One of those things I could have a satisfying fight about. Why am I a bitch? I demanded. Because you think I slept with Darok?
Shut her up before I kill her,
Lore told Barons. Don't talk to him about me. Talk to me about me. Or do you think I'm not worthy of your regard because when I believed Barons was dead, I hooked up with the enemy to accomplish my goals? How terrible of me, I mocked. I guess I should have just laid down and died with a whimper. Would that have impressed you, Lore?
Get the bitch out of my face.
I guess taking up with Darok makes me pretty... Well, I knew what word Barons hated, and I was in the mood to try it out on Lore. Mercenary, doesn't it? You can blame me for that if you want to, or you could pull your head out of your ass and respect me for it. Lore turned his head and looked at me then, as if I'd begun to speak his language. Unlike Barons, the word didn't seem to bother him. In fact, it seemed he understood, even appreciated it. Something flickered in his cold eyes. I'd interested him. Some people wouldn't see a traitor when they looked at me. Some people would see a survivor. Call me anything you like. I sleep fine at night. But you will look at me when you say it, or I'll get so far in your face you'll be seeing me with your eyes closed. You'll be seeing me in your nightmares. I'll scorch myself on the backs of your eyelids. Get off my back and stay off it. I'm not the woman I used to be. If you want a war with me, you'll get one. Just try me. Give me an excuse to go play in that dark place inside my head.
Dark place?
Barons murmured. As if you don't have one, I snapped. Your cave makes mine look like a white beach on a sunny day. Shouldering past them, I pushed up the stairs. I thought I heard a rumble of laughter behind me and glanced over my shoulder. Three men stared at me with the dead, emotionless gazes of executioners. But hey, they were all looking. Behind a chrome balustrade, the upper floor stretched, acres of smooth, dark glass walls without doors or handles. I had no idea how many rooms were up here. From the size of the downstairs, there could be 50 or more. We walked along the glass walls until some tiny detail I couldn't discern signified an entrance. Barons pressed his palm to a dark glass panel, which slid to the side. Then he pushed me into the room. He didn't step in with me, but continued moving down the hall to some other destination. The panel slid closed behind me, leaving me alone with Riordan in the room that was the guts of Chester's. It was made entirely of glass, walls, floor, and ceiling. I could see out, but no one could see in. The perimeter of the ceiling was lined with dozens of small LED screens fed by cameras that panned every room in the club, as if you couldn't see enough of what was going on merely by looking down past your feet. I stayed where I was. Every step you take on a glass floor feels like a leap of faith when the only solid floor you can see is 40 feet below.
Mac,
said Riordan. He stood behind a desk, couched in shadow. A big man, dark in a white shirt. The only light in the room came from the monitors above our heads. I wanted to launch myself across the room and attack him, claw his eyes out, bite him, punch him, stab him with my spear. I was astonished by the depth of hostility I felt. He'd made me kill Barons. High on that cliff, the two of us had beaten, cut, and stabbed the man who'd been keeping me alive almost since the day I arrived in Dublin. And I'd wondered for days that had felt like years if Riordan had wanted Barons dead. I thought you tricked me into killing him. I thought you'd betrayed him.
I kept telling you to leave. You didn't. You were never supposed to see what he was.
You mean what you all are? I corrected. All 9 of you?
Careful, Mac. Some things don't get talked about. Ever.
I reached for my spear. He could have told me the truth on the cliff, but like Barons, he'd let me suffer. The more I thought about how both of them had withheld a truth from me that would have spared me so much agony, the angrier I got. I was just making sure that when I stab and kill you, you'll come back so I can do it again. The spear was in my hand, but suddenly my hand was in a huge fist, and the tip was pointed at my own throat. Riordan could move like Danny, Barons and the others, so fast I couldn't defend myself. He stood behind me, arms snaked around my waist.
Never make that threat. Put it away, Mac, or I'll take it for good.
He jabbed me with the tip of the spear in warning. Barons wouldn't let you do that.
You might be surprised what Barons would let me do.
Because he thinks I'm a traitor.
I saw you with Darok myself. I heard you in the alley last night. When deeds and words align, the truth is plain.
I believed both of you were dead. What did you expect? The same survival instinct you admire in each other offends you in me. I think it worries you, makes me more unpredictable than you'd like. He guided my hand to the holster and tucked the spear back in.
Unpredictable is the key word there. Did you flip, Mac?
Do I look like I flipped? He brushed hair from my face, tucked it gently behind an ear. I shivered. He bristled with the same kind of energy Barons did. Heat, muscle, and danger. When Barons touches me, it turns me on. But when Riordan stands behind me, locking me in place with an arm of steel, touching me tenderly, it scares the hell out of me.
Let me tell you something about flipping, Mac.
He said softly against my ear.
Most people are good, and occasionally do something they know is bad. Some people are bad, and struggle every day to keep it under control. Others are corrupt to the core, and don't give a damn as long as they don't get caught. But evil is a completely different creature, Mac. Evil is bad that believes it's good.
What are you saying, Riordan? That I flipped and I'm too stupid to know it?
If the shoe fits.
It doesn't. Point of curiosity. Which camp are you and Barons in? Corrupt to the core and don't give a damn?
Why do you think the book killed Darok?
I knew where this was going. Riordan's theory was that I wasn't tracking the Shisadu. It kept finding me. He was about to tell me that it had killed Darok to further its goal of getting closer to me. He was wrong. It killed Darok to stop him. It told me no one was going to control it. It must have learned from me that Darok knew a shortcut to containing and using it, and it killed him to prevent me or anyone else from discovering it.
How did it learn that from you? A cozy chat over tea?
It found me the night I stayed at Darok's penthouse. It skims my mind. Tasting me, knowing me, it says. His arm tightened painfully around my waist. You're hurting me! His arm relaxed minutely.
Did you tell Barons this?
Barons hasn't exactly been in a talkative mood. Riordan was no longer standing behind me. He was at his desk again. I rubbed my stomach, relieved he was no longer touching me. He was so much like Barons that his body against mine was disturbing on multiple levels. I couldn't make out much of his face in the shadows, but I didn't need to. He was so furious that he didn't trust himself not to harm me if he remained close.
The Shisadu can pick thoughts out of your mind. Have you considered the potential ramifications of that?
I shrugged. It wasn't as if I'd had much time to consider anything. I'd been so busy jumping from the frying pan into the fire and back into the frying pan again that reflection upon the various possibles wasn't top on my list of priorities. Who could worry about potential ramifications when the real ones kept kicking you in the teeth?
It means that it knows about us,
he said tightly. First of all, why would it care? Second, I hardly know anything about you at all, so it couldn't have gotten much.
I've killed for less.
Of that I had no doubt. Riordan was stone cold and suffered no conflicts about it. If it even bothered skimming for information about you, the only thing it knows is that I thought the two of you were dead, and you're not.
Not true. You know a great deal more than that, and that the book might know about us at all should have been the first thing you told Barons the moment he changed back and you knew he was alive.
Well, forgive the fuck out of me for being shocked senseless when I realized he wasn't dead. Why didn't you tell me he was the beast, Riordan? Why did we have to kill him? I know it's not because he can't control himself when he's the beast. He controlled himself last night when he rescued me from the book. He can change at will, can't he? What happened in the Silvers? Does the place have some kind of effect on you? Make you uncontrollable? I almost slapped myself in the forehead. Barons had told me that the reason he tattooed himself with black and red protection runes was because using dark magic called a price due, unless you took measures to protect yourself against the backlash. Did using IYD require the blackest kind of magic to make it work? Would it grant his demand to magically transport him to me, no matter where I was, but devolve him into the darkest, most savage version of himself as the price? It was because of how he got there, wasn't it? I said. The spell you two worked sent him to me like it was supposed to, but the cost was that it turned him into the lowest common denominator of himself. An insane killing machine! Which he figured was all right, because if I was dying, I'd probably need a killing machine around. A champion to show up and decimate all my enemies. That was it, wasn't it? Riordan had gone completely still. Not a muscle twitched. I wasn't sure he was breathing. He knew what would happen if I pressed IYD, and he made plans with you to handle it. That was Barron's. Always thinking, always managing risks where I was concerned. He tattooed me so he would sense his mark on me and not kill me. And you were supposed to track him. That's why you both wear those cuffs, so you can find each other. And kill him so he'd come back as the man form of himself, and I'd never be any wiser. I'd get rescued and have no clue it was Barron's who'd done it, or that he sometimes turns into a beast. But you screwed up. And that's what he was mad at you about this morning on the phone. It was your failure to kill him that let the cat out of the bag. A tiny muscle twitched in his jaw. He was pissed. I was definitely right. He can always circumvent the price of black magic, I marveled. When you kill him, he comes back exactly the same as he was before, doesn't he? He could tattoo his whole body with protection runes, and when he ran out of skin, kill himself so he could come back with a clean slate to start all over. That was why his tattoos weren't always the same. Talk about your ultimate get-out-of-jail-free card! And if you hadn't botched the plan, I would never have known. It's your fault, I know, Riordan. I think that means it's not me you should kill, it's yourself. Oh, gee, wait, I said sarcastically. That wouldn't work, would it?
Did you know that when you were in the Silvers, the book paid a visit to the Abbey?
I winced. Danny told me. How many of the Shisiers were killed?
Irrelevant. Why do you think it went to the Abbey?
Irrelevant, my ass. Being unable to die, I was still having a hard time wrapping my brain around that and was certain I could come up with some creative ways to test it, had given him a fey share of arrogance and disdain for mortals. Let me guess, I said tartly. This is somehow my fault, too? Riordan pressed a button on his desk and spoke into an intercom.
Tell Barron's to leave them where they are. They're safer there. I'll bring her to them. We've got a problem, a big one.
He released the button.
Yes,
he said to me.
It is. I think that when it couldn't find you, it went to the Abbey, hunting for you, trying to get a lead on you.
Do the others believe this, too? Or is it your personal delusion? Perspective, Riordan! Get some!
I'm not the one that needs it.
Why do you hate me?
I have no emotion about you at all, Mac. I take care of my own. You are not my own.
He moved past me, pressed his palm to the door, and stood waiting for me to exit.
Barron's wants you to see your parents, so as you go about your business, you will remember they are here, with me.
Lovely. I muttered.
I suffer them to live, against my better judgment, as a favor to Barron's. He's running out of favors. Remember that, too.
XIX. You put them in a glass room? Can't you give them a little privacy? I stared at my parents through the wall. Although comfortably furnished with rugs, a bed, a sofa, a small table, and two chairs, the room was made of the same kind of glass as Riordan's office, only in reverse. Mom and Dad couldn't see out, but everyone else could see in. I glanced to the left. The shower had an enclosure of sorts. The toilet didn't. Do they know people can see in?
I spare their lives, and you ask for privacy. This isn't for you or them. It's insurance for me,
Riordan said. Barons joined us.
I told Fade to bring up sheets and duct tape.
For what? I was horrified. Were they going to roll my parents up in sheets and duct tape them?
They can tape sheets to the walls.
Oh, I said. Thanks, I muttered. I was silent a moment, watching them through the glass. Dad was sitting on the sofa, facing my mom, holding her hands, talking softly. He was robust and handsome as ever, and the extra silver in his hair only made him look more distinguished. Mom had that glazed look she got whenever she couldn't deal, and I knew he was probably talking about normal, everyday things to ground her in a reality she could face. I had no doubt he was assuring her everything was going to be okay, because that was what Jack Lane did, exuded safety and security, made you believe he could deliver on anything he promised. It was what made him such a great lawyer, such a wonderful father. No obstacle had ever seemed too large, no threat too scary with Daddy around. I need to talk to them.
No,
Riordan said.
Why?
Barons demanded. I hesitated. I'd never told Barons that I'd gone to Ashford with Villaine, or admitted that I'd overheard a conversation between my parents in which they'd been discussing the circumstances of our adoption, or that Daddy had mentioned a prophecy about me, one in which I supposedly ended up dooming the whole world. Nana O'Reilly, the 97-year-old woman whom Cat and I visited in her house by the sea, had mentioned two prophecies, one that promised hope, the other warning of a blight upon the earth. If I genuinely was part of either one, I was determined to fulfill the former. I wanted to know more about the latter so I could avoid it. I wanted the names of the people Daddy had spoken to all those years ago when he'd gone to Ireland to dig into Alina's medical history when she was sick. I wanted to know exactly what they'd told him. But there was no way I could ask him about any of it in front of Barons and Riordan. If they got the smallest whiff of some prophecy in which I supposedly doomed the world, they might just lock me up and throw away the key. I miss them. They need to know I'm alive.
They know. I videoed you walking in, and Barron showed them the clip.
Riordan paused, then added,
Jack insisted on it.
I glanced sharply at Riordan. Was that a faint smile on his face? He liked my father. I'd heard it in his voice when he called him Jack. He respected him. I glowed inside. I'm always proud of my daddy, but when somebody like Riordan likes him, even though I couldn't stand the owner of Chester's, I took it as a compliment.
Too bad you're not really his daughter. He comes from strong blood.
I gave him a look I learned from Barons.
But nobody's sure exactly where you came from, are they, Mac?
My biological mother was Isla O'Connor, leader of the Haven for the She-Seers, I informed him coolly.
Really? Because I did some digging when Barons told me what the O'Reilly woman said, and it turns out Isla had only one child, not two. Her name was Elena, and she's dead.
Obviously you didn't dig deep enough, I retorted. But I suddenly felt uneasy. So that was why Nana had called me Elena. She must have had me later. Nana just didn't know about it.
Isla was the only member of the Haven who survived the night the Shisadu was set free from its prison.
Where are you getting your information? I demanded.
And there was no later for her.
How do you know that? What do you know about my mother, Riordan? Riordan glanced at Barons. The look they exchanged spoke volumes, but unfortunately I had no idea what language they were speaking. I glared at Barons. And you wonder why I don't confide in you. You don't tell me anything.
Leave it alone. I'm handling this,
Barons told Riordan.
I suggest you do a better job. And I suggest you go fuck yourself. She didn't tell you that the book visited her the other night at Darrock's. It skims her mind, picks up her thoughts.
I think it only picks up the surface ones, I said hastily. Not everything.
It killed Darrock because it learned from her that he knew a shortcut. Wonder what else it learned.
Baron's head whipped around and he stared at me.
You said nothing of this to me.
You said nothing to me about my mother? What do you know about her? About me? His dark gaze promised retribution for my oversight. So did mine. I hated this. Barons and I were enemies. It confused my head and hurt my heart. I'd grieved him as if I'd lost the only person who mattered to me. And now here we were, adversaries again. Were we destined to be eternal enemies? One of us is going to have to trust the other, I told him.
You first, Miss Lane.
That was the whole problem. Neither of us would take the risk. I had a lengthy list of reasons why I shouldn't, and they were sound. My daddy could take the case all the way to the Supreme Court, arguing my side. Barons didn't inspire trust. He didn't even bother trying. When hell freezes over, Barons.
Same bloody page, Miss Lane. Same bloody...
I turned my gaze away in the middle of his sentence, the ocular equivalent of flipping him the bird. Riordan was watching us hard. Butt out, I warned. This is between him and me. All you need to do is keep my parents safe and...
Little hard to do when you're such a fucking loose cannon.
The door burst open, and Laura and two others stalked in. Tension rolled off them, so thick it seemed to suck the oxygen right out of the room. Fade followed behind them, carrying a pile of sheets and a roll of duct tape.
You're never going to believe what just walked into the club,
Laura told Riordan.
Tell me to change. Say the word.
My eyes narrowed. Did Laura need Riordan's permission, or was it a courtesy in his club?
The Shisadu, right?
Riordan gave Barons a pointed look.
Because it skimmed Mac's mind, and now it knows where to find us.
You are so friggin' paranoid, Riordan. Why would it even want to find you? I said.
Maybe,
one of the other men said.
We'd make a damned good ride for it, and we don't like being used. Have you taught her nothing of strategy?
Riordan fired at Barons.
I haven't had all that much time,
Barons said.
A Seely, a fucking prince. He's got a couple hundred more Seely from a dozen different castes waiting outside, threatening war, demanding you shut the place down, stop feeding the Unseely.
I gasped. Valaine?
You told him to come,
Riordan accused.
She knows him?
Laura exploded.
It's her other boyfriend,
Riordan said.
Besides Derok?
One of the other men demanded. Laura glared at Barons.
When are you going to wise up and shut this bitch down for good?
The testosterone level was rising to a dangerous high. I suddenly worried they might all transform into beasts. I'd be stuck in the middle of a pack of snarling monsters with talons and fangs and horns, and I didn't think for one minute Baron's brand would protect me from the other five. I wasn't even sure it would work on him.
You think it's this Seely you need to be worrying about?
Said Fade.
What the fuck do you think we should be worrying about?
Baron said impatiently. Fade swung his gun up and pumped a half dozen rounds into Baron's before anyone even managed to move.
Me.
The only reason it worked was because Fade caught him off guard. Barons can move so fast that shooting him isn't the easiest way to kill him. But he didn't expect Fade to shoot him, and Fade is as fast as Barons. I don't know what Barons and the others are, but until someone tells me otherwise, I'm going to assume they're all the same. They have heightened senses, smell, vision, and hearing. Barons has the strength of 10 men, and his bones are extremely resilient. I imagine they have to be, so he can transform the way he does. I've watched Barons drop 30 feet and land on his feet as light as a cat. Fade surprised them all. He managed to gun down Riordan, too, before the others attacked him and took his gun away. Fade stumbled back against the wall, and I thought how strange it was that he'd lost his weapon, but was still hanging onto the sheets.
What the fuck, Fade?
Laura snarled.
Forget your meds again.
Fade looked at me.
Your parents are next,
he purred.
I will destroy everything you love, Makayla.
I sucked in a horrified breath. Riordan wasn't paranoid. He'd been right. The Shisadu had skimmed me, lifted information about them from my mind, and acted on it swiftly. It was right here, in the room with me. It had learned about Chester's and had come to take a look around, see what it might see. I'd been out of the Silvers for 3 days, and this was the third day in a row it had found me. Was it really my fault that it had gone to the Abbey because it hadn't been able to find me in Dublin? Was I indirectly responsible for all the she-seers who died that night? How long had it been here, moving from person to person, working its way closer to me all the while? Long enough to have discovered my parents. "It's in the sheets!" I cried. "Get the sheets!" I regretted the words the instant I said them. Whoever touched it would also be possessed, and the other men still had guns. "No, don't touch the sheets!" I screamed. Fade flashed into motion and was gone. The others followed, leaving me alone. I dashed for the door, but it slid shut before I could get there, and I had no clue how to open it. I pressed my palm frantically to half a dozen places, with no success. I whirled, staring into the other room. If the Shisadu got to my parents, if Fade carried it in there, if it killed them, I couldn't bear to think about it. My parents were standing up, looking at me, but I knew they couldn't see me. They were merely staring in the direction from which the gunfire had come. The door hissed open and closed behind me.
"I have to get you out of here,"
Lore growled. I spun around, spear in my fist. "How do I know you're not the book?"
"Look at me. Where could I hide it?"
His pants and shirt clung to his muscular body like a second skin. I checked his shoes, boots. "Take them off." He kicked them off.
"Now you, lose the coat."
I slipped out of it.
"Skirt too."
"We don't have time for this," I snapped. "My parents..."
"Fade left the club. They're safe for now."
"That's not good enough."
"We'll take precautions. We're on guard now. Someone has to carry it in. No one will enter the upper levels of the club or your parents' cell with clothes on."
My brow shot up. That was going to be a real shocker for my mom.
"I said lose the skirt."
"How could Fade have passed it to me?"
"Minuscule possibility. I take no chances."
Sighing, I unzipped and dropped it. My sweater was snug. I had on a black thong. My boots clung to the shape of my legs. No place to hide a book. Happy?
Hardly.
As I zipped my skirt back up, I took a last longing glance at my parents and turned away. My gaze hitched as it passed over Baron's crumpled body, and I flinched violently. Here I was with Baron's dead again. I knew he wasn't really dead, or at least he wouldn't be for long, but my grief was too fresh and my emotions too complicated. How long until he... I broke off, horrified to hear the catch of a sob in my voice.
"Why do you give a fuck?"
"I don't. I mean, I just... shit." I turned and beat at the wall with my fists. I didn't care that my parents could hear the dull thud or that the wall shuddered beneath my blows. I didn't care what Laura thought of me. I hated Baron's being dead. Hated it. Beyond reason, beyond my understanding. I punched until Lore caught my bloody fists and pulled me away. "How long?" I demanded. "I want to know. Answer me or else..." He grinned faintly.
"What? You gonna feed me bloody runes?"
I scowled. "Do you guys tell each other everything?"
"Not everything. Priya sounded pretty fucking fascinating to me. Never did get all the details."
"How long?
Answer me."
I used voice to force him.
"Not sure this time, but it won't be as long as last time. And if you ever try to voice me again, woman, I'll kill your parents myself." What must a prince do to get a Valentine's Day kiss, Michaela?
The words floated out of the darkness. Eros skittering across my skin, pricking me with 100 tiny little cupid bows. Even with Priya-induced immunity, I still thrilled to the musical, sensual sound of Valaine's voice. I no longer begin stripping when he appears, but deep down inside me there's a summer girl who never stops wanting to, especially when he's being playful, seductive. How many Valentine's days in my life had ended with a kiss? I could count them on 2 fingers. And those had been decent kisses, not great ones. Certainly nothing to rock a woman's world. I paused with my hand on the doorknob of Baron's books and baubles. Barron's had changed the locks on the garage and the back door, so I'd had to park the Viper in the alley and walk around to the front. It had been a difficult night. I was ready for it to end. I wanted covers over my head and deep, dreamless sleep. Mere hours ago, I'd been consoling myself that, even though Barron's was furious with me, at least I would be going to sleep tonight with the comforting knowledge that he was alive. Right. Happy Valentine's Day to me.
I believe human males present flowers.
I was abruptly wreathed in the delicate scent of roses. A bouquet appeared, tucked into my arm. Petals tickled my nose. The ground at my feet was strewn with them. Dewy, lush, they gave off an otherworldly, spicy scent. I leaned my forehead against the diamond-paned cherry door. I could see my demolished shop through it. Did you come here to accuse me of being a traitor, too? It would be just like a fae to shower me with gifts while threatening me. I was through justifying myself. Seeing Barron's lifeless eyes again had nearly put me back on the cliff's edge. I had no idea why I hated seeing him dead so much, when I knew he wasn't really. Lore had assured me he would be back, although he couldn't say when. Why couldn't he say when? Did Barron's body have to heal and certain injuries took longer than others? I couldn't get the image out of my mind. Now I had two visions of Barron's to torture myself with. Gutted and shot. On top of that, I was terrified for my parents. Terrified by how easily the book had infiltrated those closest to me. First the Abbey, then Darok, Barron's, and now a threat to my parents. I could no longer dispute Riordan's conviction that the book was finding me, playing with me. But why not just kill me and get it over with? Did it really think I would, as Riordan said, flip? Nothing about the Shisadu made sense. Sometimes it gave me a splitting, crushing headache, and I could sense it coming a mile away. Other times, like tonight, I didn't have a clue it was in the same room with me. It killed everyone else it came into contact with, but not me. It hurt me, but it always left me alive. Why? I'd demanded Laura remove Mom and Dad from Dublin. He'd refused to even consider it. Said nobody would lift a finger unless Barron's told them to. So much for their demands for my head. Apparently Barron's had the final say about everything. I could always persuade Valaine to sift in, get them, and whisk them somewhere safe, except... well, maybe it was the She-Seer in my blood, but I just couldn't trust my parents to a fae.
I am not a fool, Michaela. You are playing Darok. My only question is why.
A weight slid from my shoulders. It was about time somebody believed in me. Figured it would be Valaine. Thank you, I said simply. I turned around and my eyes widened appreciatively. Valaine is always a vision. He'd muted himself, donned his human form, but it did little to diminish his otherworldly allure. In black pants, boots, and a black cashmere sweater, with his long hair spilling down his back and his velvety skin dusted with gold, he looked like a fallen archangel. Tonight he was even more majestic than ever. I wondered if leading a Seely army had given him purpose he'd lacked, if he was no longer an immortal riddled with ennui and petty desires, but was becoming a true leader of his people. He would have his hands full trying to lead the Seely court. Perhaps if Jane and the Guardians shot and caged enough of them, they'd pull their heads out. A little hardship and suffering would do the Seely a world of good. You never doubted me, even when I was standing there in the street with the Unseely army?
I know the woman you are, Michaela. Were you fair, you would belong to my court.
He studied me with ancient, iridescent eyes.
My army is not as discerning as I. They believe you are his ally. We will persuade them otherwise.
A smile touched the corners of his lips.
If nothing else, your claim that Barron's was dead gave you away. I saw him tonight with you at Chester's.
He paused.
I am uncertain how you managed to deceive the Unseely princes. They were convinced he was dead.
He delivered the statement so blandly that I almost missed the question. and the threat. Lacing his silken words was steel. Beneath his playfulness, Verlaine was in a dangerous mood. But why? I knew he'd been at Chester's. Had something happened after Laura had whisked me out and dumped me at the Viper? Did he know the Shisadu had also been there? Just a little trick I learned, I evaded.
Behrens was never dead. Was he incapacitated for a time?
Verlaine and Behrens hate each other. Something to do with Behrens killing Verlaine's princess a long time ago. Instinct deeper than I could fathom made me lie. You're kidding, right? Behrens is unkillable.
I would know how you deceived the Unseelie princes, Michaela.
There was the steel again, lacing the silk. It was not a question, it was a command. He moved into the alcove with me, and the intoxicating fragrance of the Fey court, of jasmine and sandalwood, perfumed the delicate spice of the purple petals crushing beneath his boots. Danger stepped in with him. I cocked my head, studying him. I suddenly knew where his anger was coming from. He was on a dangerous edge, not because he thought I had managed to deceive the Dark Princes, but because he was worried they'd known all along that Behrens wasn't dead, and had somehow managed to deceive him. Verlaine sat on the Queen's High Council. He'd been hand-picked by the leader of their race to see through court intrigue to the truth of matters. And he'd failed. His inability to discern truth from lie, from an Unseelie no less, had shaken him. I understood that. It's debilitating to realize you can't trust your own judgment. However, in this case, he hadn't been wrong. Behrens really had been dead, and the Unseelie princes hadn't deceived Verlaine. But I wasn't about to tell him that. Not only had Behrens insisted I lie to Verlaine, it seemed I was programmed with an unshakable imperative to keep Behrens secret. Knowing him, he'd probably tattooed it on me somewhere. Still, I could give Verlaine some of the truth. Remember when you said that I had only begun to discover what I was? His gaze sharpened and he nodded. He touched my hair.
I am pleased you restored it, Michaela. It is lovely.
Yeah, well, Behrens hadn't seemed to think so. You were right. I've recently become aware of a place inside me where I know things that I can't explain knowing. I find things I don't understand. He inclined his head, waiting. I found runes that the princes didn't like. I used them with a combination of others to create an illusion that Behrens was dead. I lied. He processed my words. The Unseelie hadn't duped him. I'd duped the Unseelie. Faint lines of tension eased in his face.
You convinced Darok and the princes that Behrens was dead, so Darok would believe you genuinely sought an alliance with him?
Exactly.
Why?
I hesitated.
Michaela, can we not finally trust each other?
He said softly.
What must I do to convince you? Command me. I am yours.
I was so tired of lying and being lied to, of not trusting and not being trusted. He knew a shortcut to controlling the Shisadu. It's why the book killed him.
It is true, then, what we heard.
He murmured.
It was not a hunter, after all.
I nodded.
And what is this shortcut?
I wasn't able to get it out of him before he died. He studied me.
Deceiving the princes so thoroughly would have required immense power.
He began to say something, then seemed to change his mind and stopped. After a moment, he said carefully,
"These runes you used, what color were they?"
"Crimson." He went still, regarding me as if he wasn't entirely sure what he was looking at. It made me extremely uncomfortable. Then he said,
"Did they beat like small human hearts?"
"Yes."
"Impossible."
"Would you like me to summon them now?"
"You could. With such ease."
I nodded.
"That will not be necessary. I accept your word, Michaela."
"What are they? Darok wouldn't tell me."
"I imagine he was even more interested in you after he saw them. Tremendous power, Michaela. Parasites. They graft onto anything they touch, grow, and spread like a human disease."
"Great. I remembered how they'd seemed larger in the bedroom at Darok's penthouse. Had I inadvertently loosed another unseelie evil on the world?
Used with the Song of Making, they can form an impenetrable cage,
he said.
I have never seen them myself, but our histories tell us they were employed on occasion by the first Seelie Queen for punishment, and were one of the ingredients used in the walls of the Unseelie prison.
I jerked. How could I possibly know anything about runes used to build the Unseelie prison walls?
That is precisely what I would like to know.
I sighed and rubbed my eyes. More questions. They were beginning to gnaw at my sanity.
You are weary,
he said softly.
On this night for lovers, where would you sleep, Michaela? In a silken hammock tied between palm trees, swaying over tropical surf, with a devoted fey lover to attend your every desire? Would you share a fey prince's bower? Or would you climb the stairs in a ruined bookstore to sleep alone in the building of a man who has never trusted you and never will?
Ouch! He touched my jaw, slid a finger beneath my chin, and tipped my face back.
What a lovely woman you've become. You are no longer the child that arrived here months ago. You have been tempered. You display strength and determination, conviction and purpose. But are you wise? Or are you ruled by a heart that foolishly imprinted on the wrong man? Like most humans, are you incapable of change? Change requires an admission of error. Your race devotes itself to justifying its errors, not correcting them.
My heart hasn't imprinted on anyone.
Good. Then it may yet be mine.
He lowered his head and kissed me. I closed my eyes and melted into his body. It was a novel change to have someone believe in me, answer my questions when I asked them, just plain be nice to me, and there was no denying his erotic allure. When his fey name eased gently into my mouth, teasing, offering, waiting for me to invite it to settle, I breathed into his kiss and he breathed back. Consonants I would never be able to pronounce, with vowels comprised of delicate arias, began to pierce the meat of my tongue, causing my entire body to flush with sensual pleasure. I inhaled the scent of fey prince and the intoxicating aroma of spiced roses into my lungs. Not a bad Valentine's Day kiss. Not bad at all. He took his time giving me his name, letting the impossible syllables work tenderly, slowly into me, until at last they settled and I exploded, shuddering against him. I stood in the alcove of BB&B, kissing him long after his name was mine again. I was still glowing when I climbed the stairs and fell across my bed. Dude! What happened in here? I leaned my broom against a fallen bookcase and turned to see Danny framed in the open door of BB&B, cramming a protein bar in her mouth. Her eyes narrowed as she absorbed the destruction. Morning sunlight shafted into the alcove, framing her auburn curls with a halo of fire. Though the day was bright, nearly windless, a whopping 60 degrees after the recent snow, I couldn't get warm, even with both gas fireplaces on. Close the door, will you? I said. I'd dreamed of the cold place all night. Repeatedly I'd been jarred to near waking by some fright, a slip into a treacherous drift, a nameless terror stalking me. But each time the nightmare had sucked me back down. I'd scaled icy cliffs, searching for the beautiful, sad woman calling out, certain I would find her just over the next ridge. But at the crest of each summit, the only thing I'd found were dozens of hourglasses, with fine black sand rapidly trickling to the lower half. I'd raced from one to the next, frantically turning them over, but they'd kept emptying again in seconds. Moments before I'd awakened for the final time, I realized the reason I couldn't find her was because I'd waited too long. Time had been of the essence, and I was too late. She was gone. Hope, like the fine grains of trickling black sand, had vanished too. I'd blown it. I'd showered and dressed, failure weighing heavy on my bones. Desperate to make progress, to see accomplishment of any kind, I'd attack the debris in the demolished bookstore with a broom and a vengeance. I'd been at it for hours, beating sawdust and splinters from Baron's rugs, sweeping broken glass into neat piles. Danny swaggered in and closed the door. "Vlaine said you wanted to see me. Don't know what for, but seeing I ain't too busy this morning, figured I'd give you a listen. But it better be different kind of stuff, 'cause last time I saw you, you weren't talking like no friend of mine," she preened. "He brought me chocolate. Dude, like I'm his Valentine or something. Me and him, we had a talk. Told him I'm almost 14 and I'm gonna give him my virginity one day." I groaned. She'd actually told him that? Before I'd sent him for her, I'd made him swear to turn off the lethal eroticism. "We're going to have a long discussion about your virginity and Valaine as soon as things calm down." "Newsflash, Mac. They ain't never calming. World is what it is. This is life now." Despite her casual swagger, her flippant tone, her eyes were cold, wary. Tough words. Tougher truth to swallow. I never would. "It's not staying this way, Danny. We're not going to let it." "What can we do about it? World's too big. Sides, ain't so bad. Till you go and get all pissy. Thought you and me were like peas in the megapod, and there ain't no other veggies on the plate. Then you go play-acting, you're humping the Lord Monster, pissing me off." She shot me a glare crammed full of words she would never say. "You abandoned me, left me alone. I'm here, but this better be good." She pulled an apple out of her pocket and began munching it. Last night, before Valaine left, I'd asked him to find her this morning and tell her Barons had never been dead, that I'd been undercover, and I was sorry for the deception. But no apology by proxy could replace the real thing. She needed to hear it from me, and I needed to say it. "I'm sorry, Danny. I hated hurting you." "Dude, get over yourself. Didn't hurt me. It'd take way more than that. Figured you were PMSing. No big. Just wanted to hear you say you were a dick." "I was a dick. And it may not have bothered you, but it drove me crazy. Forgive me." She jerked and gave me an uncomfortable look. The precocious, gifted teen had been treated one of two ways at the Abbey. Ordered around, or ignored. I doubted anyone had ever bothered to apologize to her for anything. "Saying you're a dick was enough already, jeez. Getting all touchy-feely like a grown-up. Gah!" She stepped around the wreck of the cashier's counter and tried to flash me a grin, but it came out lopsided. "So, what gives? Mini tornado blow through?" "Lose the coat," I evaded. I could hardly say, after I killed Barons, he was so pissed off at me that he trashed the bookstore. "Right, forgot." She shrugged out of it, left it in a puddle of black leather on the floor. Beneath it, she had on skin-tight black low-ride jeans, a tight sweater, and black high tops. Her green eyes sparkled. "With a book hitching rides, hiding on people, guess we're all going to be dressing like skanks for a while, huh? Skin-tight or skin? Dude, everybody's everything's going to be hanging out, and some of those fat chicks at the Abbey are going to gross my eyeballs right out of my head. Muffin tops and camel toes. Ugh!" I bit my lip, trying not to laugh. That was Danny. Not an ounce of tact. Like the world around her, she was what she was. No holds barred. "Not everybody has super speed metabolism," I said dryly. "And what I wouldn't give for it. I'd eat chocolate for breakfast, pastries for lunch, and pie for supper." She polished off the apple and tossed it into a pile. "Looking forward to seeing Barons, though," she said enthusiastically. "You? Nah, guess you don't care. You seen him naked for what, like, months, didn't ya?" There were times I seriously wished she'd bar some of those holds. I was suddenly in a basement again, watching Barons walk naked across the room, telling him he was the most beautiful man I'd ever seen. I changed the subject hastily. "What's going on at the Abbey? I know you left, but what were things like before you did?" Her face darkened. bad, Mac. Real bad. Why? You thinking of going back? Gotta tell you, don't think it's a good idea. Good idea or not, I had no choice. According to Nana, when the Shisadu had escaped the Abbey 20-some years ago, my mother was Haven mistress. According to Riordan, the entire Haven had been wiped out that night, with the exception of my mom. Nana had called me Alina. According to Riordan, Alina was the only child Isla ever had. Not only would trying to interrogate Riordan be an exercise in futility, given how tight-lipped he was, but he was currently dead, and I had no idea for how long. That left Nana or the Abbey. The Abbey was closer, and the occupants weren't nearly a century old and prone to nodding off in the middle of a sentence. The original members of the Haven might all be dead, but some of my mom's peers had to be alive still, even after the book's recent massacre. Others, besides Rowena, had known my mother. Others knew something, if only rumors, about what happened that night. And there were those libraries I needed to get into. The ward I'd not been able to pass, the one that had given even Valaine fits. Speaking of which, I'd forgotten to ask him about what had happened to him that day when I summoned him to the Abbey. I made a mental note to follow up. I was also toying with the idea of confronting Rowena and trying to force truth from her. I wondered if the power of mental coercion Darok believed the old woman possessed was a